everyone. Welcome back. I hope you had a good weekend and that you're doing it well. I'm Henrik. We're based out of Sweden. And if you're new to the program, don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feeds. Don't miss the news, videos, and of course, the radio programs. We also have Radio 314 every other Wednesday with Lana. The websites, redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com, will get you all the information that you need. Today we are talking with Robert Felix, a former architect who became interested in the Ice Age cycle back in 91. He spent the next 8.5 years full-time researching and writing about the coming Ice Age. Since then he has been dedicated to speaking about his research. Robert is the author of Not by Fire but by Ice and Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps. By the way, this program was recorded just a day before that freak snowstorm, the cold snap that pushed all the way down to the south of the United States, where places like Atlanta in Georgia saw snowfall and record low temperatures. It also went all the way down to Texas and affecting Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, and other states that usually are spared from the winters of the north. So we won't go into more detail about that particular event, but more importantly, however, we are going to talk about the bigger picture of when the next Ice Age is due. Hi, Robert. Hope you're doing well today. Thanks for coming on with us. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Henrik. I'm glad to be on with you.
You're at February 2011. That's when we last talked, almost to the day here soon, 3 years ago. And we have indeed had some very interesting developments since that time. The more we learn and the more we piece together this thing, a picture starts to emerge pretty clearly here. But let's just go over some of the latest stuff before we kind of get to, you know, your main theory and the works that you've been doing and so forth. But is it really true that we're heading towards a mini Ice Age at this stage? And what are some of the recent developments that is pointing is in this direction, Robert?
Well, I certainly think that we're headed for a mini Ice Age. And well, of course, I think we're headed for the bigger Ice Age even. But I first came out with this book in 1997, Not by Fire, but by Ice. And at that time, I said that we would be admitting within 20 years that we were in an Ice Age. Now, certainly, there's certainly a lot of people not admitting to that yet, but just in, just less than 2 weeks ago, both the BBC and the Daily Mail, had headlines warning of a possible mini Ice Age, and they have been really strong global warming proponents, or, you know, anthropogenic global warming proponents for many years. So it must have really drove them nuts to have to report that we could be headed into a mini Ice Age. Now, the reason, of course, is the decline in sunspots, and that's also what they admitted. But sunspots, those areas on the sun. Anyway, the sunspots now are a fraction of what they have been, and a fraction of what science has expected, and sunspot activity is at its lowest already in more than 100 years. Of course, that has to do with the Maunder Minimum, because during the last little Ice Age, they had what was called the Maunder Minimum, when sunspot activity pretty much declined to zero. And at that time, the ice started moving down out of the mountains, and literally millions of people died of starvation. Well, now they say that it's the lowest in 100 years, but I think it's a lot lower than that, because the now we have much better telescopes than they had back. You know, Galileo is the one that invented the telescope back in the 1600s, and now we have much better telescopes, so we're counting a lot more sunspots than they were able to count at that time. So I think we're probably already close to the Maunder Minimum level already.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think looking a little bit at some of the data from the Maunder Minimum, it says that Gustav Sperder was one of the ones who observed this during a 30-year period, and he said he observed fewer than 50 sunspots at that time, as opposed to more typically, it said 40,000 to 50,000. And just checking your website, I think at this time, as of January 26th, there are 3 sunspots on the sun right now.
Yes, there are. I try to update. I forget to update that some days, but I try to update that every 2 or 3 days. But, yeah, sunspot activity is far lower than like NASA expected, far lower than most scientists, and yet Some scientists, like Theodore Landscheid, have been predicting this for years and years, but other people say the sun isn't important. And I don't know how they can say the sun is not important when it comes to our climate.
Well, it is, and it's highly suggestible that, you know, there's a 400-year kind of cycle there, and we had the last minimum ice age there about 1600 to, you know, 750, something like that, before it starts to kind of pick up a little bit again. So how does that work, though, if you can explain that to us, with the sunspot and how that interacts and changes our climate here?
Well, there's two parts to that, really. There's the part of the lower sunspots, but there's also a time when the sun actually goes into what they call a solar retrograde motion. And it's a time when there's two major planets, and I'm trying to think, Jupiter and Saturn, but anyway, planets are always in different areas, different quadrants of the sun. And when those two planets both end up in the same quadrant of the sun, which only happens about every 180 years, when those two pull on the sun. The sun actually has its own little mini orbit. And they pull on the sun and pull it out of its, a little bit away from its orbit. And at that time, about every 180 years, the climate on Earth becomes cooler and more extreme. So some parts cooler and some parts more droughts. And for whatever reason, nobody really is sure of the reason, every other beat of that 180-year cycle, about every 360 years, the Earth does enter into a mini ice age. And this has got nothing to do with humans. It's got nothing to do with CO2. But this 360-year cycle matches up with the collapse of civilizations. It matches up with the collapse of the Roman Empire, of the Greek Empire, when Genghis Khan rushed out of the north, where that matched up with the Little Ice Age cycle. The Sumerian Empire collapsed at one of these cycles. So I think these things are much more important than anybody realizes, and I wish we could be talking. I'm glad that you've called, because I wish we could be talking about it a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very, very important, and again, who knows how this will develop and in what direction it will go if it unfolds, you know, as you're predicted. We have no idea how to deal with this situation, specifically with the technology that we have at our disposal. I mean, people, the further back in time you go, the more subsistence in living you had. People were accustomed to living off the land and everything else. Today, it would be a total chaos that would set in, unfortunately, I think.
It would be total chaos in one respect, but better in another respect. Because, for instance, during the last Little Ice Age in the United Kingdom, millions of people died of starvation. I mean, you didn't want to be thrown in jail, because sometimes you became food for the other people that were in jail. And there are written instances of parents eating their own children. It got so bad. But now we have a much better food distribution system, because back then, if you were in a small area, you know, let's say 50 miles away from the nearest food supplies, and you got snowed in, what in the world are you going to do? But today, we have trucks, we have cars, we have airplanes, we have trains, we have boats, we have much better transportation systems, so we can bring food from longer distances. I think that will help a little. But I'm not sure how much that will help. It won't help much if all of the oil fields in the north are covered with ice.
Yeah.
Or if the coal fields in the north are covered with ice. And it will help to a certain extent. But if we could start being aware of it, I think we could plan a little bit better. But I don't know how much.
Is that, by the way, something you have looked into? Let's say that we have a full-on onset mini ice age that even then might develop into one of the big whoppers, if you will. Is there any way with the technology that we have available right now that we could resist that, that we could live on top of the ice in any capacity, or were we just be pushed, you know, just further south with the ice? That would be it. We couldn't resist this thing at all.
I remember one time I was doing a radio interview with a radio station in Canada, and some guy called in and he said that he lived in a trailer or a mobile home, and he was just going to get he was just going to start jacking it up because of the ice.
Right.
But I figured he's going to have jacks that are a mile long,
right?
You know, because
right.
Some areas of Canada were covered with one, well, even 2 miles thick of ice. So, no, I don't know that our technology would help us all that much at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very discouraging. So what happened here with the recent, the polar vortex, or what now has been dubbed the 2014 North American cold wave? What drove that, and is that indicative of something that's going to, you know, come and every year and going to get worse and worse, or is this just a one-off?
Well, you know, who is it? Piers Corbin. He's an astrophysicist in the United Kingdom, and he's been saying that we're headed into a little ice age. So, you know, there's astrophysicists who have been saying this, or for instance, also Dr. Halilulo Abdusanatov, who's an astrophysicist in Russia. And he's not just any astrophysicist, as if that were not enough by itself, but he also happens to be head of the Russian part of the International Space Station. I mean, so this guy is, talk about being legitimate, and he has been saying for years that we're headed into a little ice age. So, and now I've forgotten the other half of your question. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries about that exactly. Basically, what drove this thing, and if it's something that's going to, you know, keep on recurring and getting worse and worse as we go each season, each winter.
Well, okay, now it reminds me. The sunspots, and this is why I mentioned Piers Corbin, is he said that this change in the sunspots and the decline in activity, it will change the jet stream. And so I've been hearing it called the polar vortex, but really I'm just looking at it's the change in the jet stream that is moving this cold air further south. And in this case, I'll have to talk about the United States, but I have a map on my website on iceagenow.info, but down to, on the right-hand side of the first page, I have an ice age map that shows where the ice extended to in the North American continent during the last ice age. And when I look at the maps of where this jet stream is now taking the cold, sometimes they match up almost exactly with that map that I have there on the page. So it would just look to me like that jet stream is really what controls where the snow goes. Now, with that said, you know, the United States right now is having record cold temperatures. They're looking during the next week, the temperature is going to be 20 to 40 degrees below average. It doesn't really take that much. And one of the things I keep saying is it does not have to be all that much colder to have an ice age. During the last ice age, on average, in the world, temperatures were only about 5 degrees colder than they are right now.
Wow.
So when we're looking at temperatures 20 degrees, 40 degrees below average, we're way past the idea of an ice age. An ice age isn't necessarily almost all that much colder. It just gets more precipitation in the winter.
Right.
And that precipitation, you know, it falls as snow, and then the winters last a little bit longer, and then they come back a little bit earlier in the year, but it's that snow that doesn't melt, and it's also snow blitzes, so that you have times when the huge amounts of snow fall in just a couple or 3 days. So it's not like glaciers come grinding out of the north.
Right.
It's that we get more and more snow. So the temperatures, you know, right now in the United States that are so low, yeah, I think that's important, but I think it's even more important that we watch in Sweden, in the United Kingdom, wherever we are, is they watch the amount of snow that's starting to fall.
And
the precipitation. For instance, during the last little ice age, and it sounds like you know a lot about that, but during the last little ice age in Great Britain, for example, the rainy season lasted for about 5 weeks longer in the spring, so the farmers couldn't really plant their fields. And then the rainy season came back a few weeks earlier in the fall, so they weren't able to harvest those fields. That's where the big problem still lies. I keep on going back to food.
I'm worried
about food.
Yeah, exactly, because that would be much more difficult to, you know, to farm. Obviously, it wouldn't be enough to go around, and it would be all those things that we're accustomed to wouldn't be, is not something we could keep up. And the question there then, of course, is, all right, is there any, you know, technology greenhouse-wise that we could actually utilize and still, you know, do some growing? I mean, if you look at how things are in, I guess, in Alaska or northern, you know, Scandinavia and stuff like that, there is a season there, but you're stuck to that. It doesn't matter what you do. Sure, you can heat up, you know, have a heated, you know, greenhouse and stuff like that, but it doesn't do that much, really. When the winter sets in, that's it, right?
Right. Well, but if we could have, for instance, you mentioned Alaska. During the last ice age, really not much of Alaska was covered. Canada was covered by 1 to 2 miles of ice, but Alaska remained a lot like it is today because the Pacific currents were keeping the warmth there. So there are certainly areas in the world where greenhouses would be like gold, or even United Kingdom. I mean, where they're going to get more rain, but they're not going to necessarily get all that much more snow. So they will eventually. I mean, during the last ice age, eventually there were polar bears roaming the outskirts of London. So that would happen eventually. but I think we're talking about moving south, unfortunately. For a lot of people, that's probably going to be the savior. But again, I think there will be wars, as there were during other ice ages, many ice ages, that there will be wars over food, there will be wars over water, and somebody who wants to move south is going to find out that southern country is going to close their borders to them. So, a lot of things like that will be out of our hands.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, exactly. It would be a reversal of what we have seen, but you know, the North has been good in opening up their borders, so I hope they will return that favor once that happens.
Yes, because I think, for instance, United States, a lot of people will be wanting to move to Mexico.
Right.
I don't think they have to go that far south, by the way. All you have to really do is look at the maps of previous ice ages and see how far south the ice extended, and then just try to get south of there. I know in the United States, for instance, the ice moved down out of Canada into the northern part of the United States, but the ice essentially followed the Missouri River. And on the north side of that river, as near as scientists can tell, there was a cliff of ice about 15 stories tall. But on the south side of the river, people could have lived there. And that's possible today. Many years ago, I lived in Juneau, Alaska, about a quarter mile in front of the Mendenhall Glacier. So there's that glacier that I could walk to from where I was living, and yet temperatures in Juneau at that time were really not bad at all. It's amazing. You can live near a glacier.
Yeah. And as you say, it's that once the seasons are still there, it's just that it gets longer and longer, and then due to the precipitation, you have the buildup of the glaciers. So, but another component to this, though, is what you mentioned in terms of the change of the jet stream. That could do potential major damage or change, if you will, the climate in a massive way. I mean, for example, imagine the Pacific currents turning or the Gulf Stream basically shutting down, as they've been talking about for a while now. That would drastically change that, though, if something like that happened, right?
It would, and I'm not, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, or whenever they had that BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, they were talking about that shutting down the Gulf Stream,
right?
The part that goes to your area. I don't think that had anything to do with it, but yes, if that Gulf Stream takes temperatures, takes warm water from the south up to your area, essentially, and if that shuts down, then yes, all of Europe is going to be very cold very quickly. And of course, I mentioned earlier that at one time polar bears were roaming the outskirts of London. So, and it happens. There's a cycle there, and it keeps on coming back.
Exactly. Now, I remember there's a Norwegian port, Narvik, it's called. It's way up there. Not the most northern tip, but it's pretty good, distance up there, and the waters there never freeze because of the Gulf Stream. It's amazing how that just pushes its way all the way up north of the British Isles and all the way up to northern, northwestern Norway, really, which is in one of these canals where they still can do, you can have ice-free conditions right up there because of the Gulf Stream. But if you go further south, for example, between Sweden and Finland to the Baltic Ocean, the Gulf of Botnia right there, that tends to freeze over quite regularly. So that shows the power of the Gulf Stream,
Yes. Now, I understand the Baltic Sea is a lot of it is ice-covered right now. When you mentioned that, though, you mentioned those seas, and I want to mention something, is during the last ice age, the Arctic Ocean, and this has confused scientists for a lot, because even though most of Canada was covered by 1 to 2 miles thick of ice, the Arctic Ocean remained, it didn't have any more ice than it does today. And that has confused scientists, but I think that is because of underwater volcanic activity.
Right.
Because the Arctic Ocean does have lots of underwater volcanoes. There's the primary one I think of is known as the Gakel Ridge. The Gakel Ridge is an underwater mountain chain that is bigger than the Alps. It runs for 1,100 miles long. I'm sorry, I don't know how to quickly convert that to kilometers.
But that's okay.
It's 1,100. It's 1,100 miles long, underwater. Some of those underwater mountains are up to 3 miles high, and they are very active volcanically. The Max Planck Institute, and this was made, I guess, maybe 5 years ago, but they weren't sure how much volcanic activity there was there. They decided they'd check. And when they sent their submersibles down, some of those volcanoes underwater are so active that they started to melt some of their equipment. So that, I believe, is what kept the Arctic relatively ice-free during the last ice age. And then, of course, around the world during the last ice age, volcanic activity picked up dramatically. And that's above water volcanic activity. Well, underwater volcanic activity is far more important than above water. So one of my main theories here in my book and in what I talk about is that what I see is that the underwater volcanoes heat the oceans and also heated the Arctic Ocean. And so you've got the oceans heating and pumping more and more moisture into the sky. Well, that moisture rises into a sky that has been cooled down by the above water volcanoes, and that is your recipe for disaster.
Huh.
That's what I see happening. You know, when I started researching to write Not by Fire, But by Ice, scientists thought there were like 10,000 underwater volcanoes in the entire world. That was their strong belief. That's what everything showed. Well, then in 1993, they by accident found another 1,100 underwater volcanoes off the coast of Easter Island. And these things are pumping water into the, pumping lava into the sea that's more than 2,000 degrees hot. So they increased the world supply of underwater volcanoes by 10% in just a matter of months. Well, now, NASA now believes that there could be as many as 3 million underwater volcanoes.
Wow.
So in just 22 years, we've gone from believing there were 10,000 underwater volcanoes to now believing that there are 3 million. Now, they're not all active at one time by any means, but with 3 million of those, well, in Hawaii, they've been having lava pour into the sea from Kilauea volcano, pouring into the sea daily for more than 20 years. And when you see videos of that, you realize that that stuff is boiling the water. So that is what I see as a big problem, leaving out the sunspots, leaving out the cycle. But I think this little ice age cycle, somehow increases volcanic activity both above water and below. And that is where, that's what we've got to be watching.
And any idea of what drives that then? Because I would imagine it would be by the time we had a lot of ice on top of the poles, the north and south would basically, it would be so heavy as well for the Earth that it would literally compress, it would turn into an oval more than a sphere, right? And that in itself would put tremendous pressure on the tectonic plates and everything. And is that what triggers potentially volcanoes? But you're mentioning this is before it gets to that stage even, right? Yeah. So what triggers it?
Well, you are right. The during ice ages, the Earth does become very, very slightly, I think the word is oblated or
right.
something like that, but
yeah.
it does get compressed a little tiny bit. And of course, the oceans cover 71% of the Earth's surface. And by the way, when this happens, yeah, you've got the ice growing thicker in the north and the south, but you've also got the oceans growing shallower. I hear all this yelling about the oceans, ocean levels rising. No, they're going to fall. During the last ice age, sea levels were something like 470 feet lower than they are today. It is amazing. For instance, between Russia and Alaska, I can't think of the strait there right now, but it'll come to me. But
Bering Strait?
The Bering Strait. Very good. Yes, thank you. That, during the last ice, the Bering Strait's only about 270 feet deep. So during the last ice age, with all of the ice and snow accumulating in the north and south, of course, that moisture had to come from somewhere, and it came from the oceans. So during the last ice age, the Bering Strait was actually above water.
Yeah.
And so our ancestors in the United States, our ancestors could have walked to the United States. There was a land bridge, and it's kind of misleading. They call it a land bridge between Russia and Alaska, but actually sea levels were so low that Alaska, the state of Alaska, was twice as big as it is now.
Yeah.
And on the United States East Coast, for instance, the shoreline was 100 miles further east than it is now. If you'd have been in, the state of Florida, for instance, was more than twice as big as it is now. And off the coast of New Jersey, you could have gone out 100 miles and you still would have found mammoths eating grass 100 miles further east than they can now. It's amazing the differences. So yes, when you're talking about that, the weight builds up on the north and south, and then there's less weight in the center of the Earth where all of the sea levels are lower.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, think about all those sites that are underwater. I mean, it's clear that there's been civilization way further down into the what today is the ocean. I mean, the land bridges is correct, as you say, in the same thing in the UK. England was connected to the European continent. Forget what actually that was called. There was another between Denmark and Sweden, Dogger Island or Doggersbanka, which is it's happening all over the place. So this is something that potentially would revert back then, if you will. It would be the precipitation would lead to buildup of the water in the form of glaciers, which would remove slowly water from the oceans and once again revealing these sites, basically, right?
Absolutely. And you know, in 2000, I think it was 2011, 2012, both of those years, even with all of the talk about rising oceans, sea levels actually declined in those 2 years, and that is from satellite measurements. I have it somewhere on my website. I don't remember where it is now, but during those 2 years, the sea levels actually declined by 6 or 7 millimeters per year. Not very much, but it's totally opposite of what the global warming proponents have been advocating. So to me, that was another indication. You know, I just look at all of the physical stuff that's going on. That's another indication to me that we're looking at an ice age. And around the world, we've been having, you know, the United States this year is having record snow, but last year, I think many parts of Europe had record snow. There were parts of Romania that, where the snow was up to the tops of the chimneys of the houses. I mean, my gosh, we shouldn't be ignoring that sort of thing.
No, indeed. I mean, and leading on from that as well, I think it was just a few days ago now, was it the Stephen Goddard released some new numbers as to how there was they've been trying to push the temperatures further up to prove that it's continuing to warming, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Stephen Goddard showed, and he went back for I guess 100 years, but he discovered that NASA and NOAA and I guess probably Hat Crewed in United Kingdom, but all of these scientific institutions, they have been homogenizing the actual record and the actual data and adding a degree. So if you took, they call it adjusting, but if you took away their so-called adjustments and just looked at the actual data, you would see that during the last 90 years there's been a cooling trend. I think this is almost criminal, that we're preparing for global warming when we should be preparing for the other direction.
Right, yeah. Well, this is what they did in the 70s, though, right? They warned people of a new cooling, and then it got warming again, and now they're going in the opposite direction. But who knows? Soon enough, they'll flip back to cooling, and you know, no one will remember. They'll go in the memory hole, right?
No, whoever is in charge politically gets to rewrite the history. So
that's right.
They can change it. And that has been, that's what a part of what they've been doing is for instance, in the 1930s, the United States had what's called the Dust Bowl. The 1930s were the warmest on record. It was warmer then than it has been during the last 20 or 30 years. But slowly, they've been removing that from the record. And then there was a big chance that there was something called the medieval warm period, back in like the 1200s when it was warmer than it is today. And scientists, where they can, have been trying to remove that from the record so that they can show that it's actually warmer now than it was then. It's not true. Down on the right-hand side of my webpage, again, I've got a graph. It shows warmer than today during most of the last 10,000 years. And I would invite people to look at that. I'm going to click on it right now just so I can just mention it. But during the last 10,000 years, I think that the temperatures have been warmer than today for more than 9,000 of those years. So, you know, we're being told it's global warming. We're being warned. And that comes from Dr. Don Easterbrook. He's a professor of geology at Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington. And he's been studying this for years and years and years. But anyway, he's looking at that during the last 10,000 years, at least 9,000 of those years have been warmer than they are today. So when I hear people screaming about global warming, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, There was a period, I agreed during from about 1980 to about 1998. It did warm, but I don't think it had anything whatsoever to do with humans. And now it's cooling, and I don't think this has anything to do with humans either. I mean, I think we're being grandiose if we think that we can affect the weather.
Yeah, I know. It's very interesting. You mentioned that this is, borderline, criminal to go against the grain in this way in terms of what we're actually seeing going on with the numbers. But there's a couple of other things that ties into this, of course, with the whole global warming debate. You have, on top of that, you have cap and trade. There are political incentives. There are, ideas about reforming economics and industry lying, behind this as well. So where is this leading, and how long do you think they'll be able to keep up that charade before people really realize that, wait a minute, it's actually getting cooler. What is going on here?
Well, I thought that would happen more quickly. Since I came out with this book, not the five, but I was talking about an ice age coming, I have not had to change my story. But the global warming proponents have had to, and so then they started to call it climate disruption, and now they're calling it climate change, and now I'm hearing them say that, it's because the Arctic is getting warmer, that all of that cold from the Arctic is now moving down the United States. I don't understand the twisted logic. But I know that when I talk to someone who believes in global warming, I don't seem to get very far. There's like a religious component to it.
Right.
And it's kind of like arguing with someone about religion. Forget it. I mean, I don't argue with people about religion because they believe what they believe. There are people in my own family that don't necessarily think I'm right.
Sure.
So, dude, there are definitely scientists out there who totally agree with me, but I don't know. It could be that as this continues, that it'll morph over into people saying, "Oh yeah, it's just climate change and it's caused by humans."
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if that happens, unfortunately.
Is what would you say? We hear all the time that it's, among the respected scientists, there is more or less consensus about what is going on. But there's a lot of critics to this, a lot of people, and those who are there being silenced. We've seen them pushed out of the media or losing their place in, as a scientific advisor to, certain media outlets, as happened in the UK and such. Is there such a thing as consensus? And if not, is it a 50-50 at this stage between the scientists, or is it possible to put a number on that?
No, I don't think there is a consensus. A few years ago, 31,000 scientists signed a petition saying they didn't think that, and these were PhDs, and 31,000 scientists signed a petition saying no, they did not think that this was happening. I've been on the radio, done an interview with Dr. Tim Ball. He was a climatologist at the University of Winnipeg in Canada for 30 years,
yeah.
And he taught climatology, and he absolutely does not, he just calls it the biggest hoax in the world. I've been on the radio, done an interview with meteorologist Joe DeLeo, who's been a meteorologist for more than 30 years. Joe DeLeo actually, for many of those years, was a teacher of meteorology at Lyndon State College in Vermont, and he taught many of today's meteorologists. I have many TV station meteorologists who agree with me, they can lose their jobs. The Oregon, the state climatologist for the state of Oregon, the United States, came out and said that he did not believe in it. He got fired. The state climatologist for the state of Washington came out saying he didn't believe in it. He got fired. The state climatologist for the state of Virginia, Patrick Michaels, came out saying he didn't believe in it. He got fired. And If I'm a young scientist and I see my boss get fired, what do you think I'm going to do? I've got kids that I got to put through college. I've got car payments to make. I've got, you know, so I'm not saying they're all bad. They just see the handwriting on the wall, and it, to me, it's all politically motivated. It has nothing to do with science, or almost nothing to do. But I mean, we all got a survival institute, and you know, we all want to be survive. And if I see my boss getting fired, I'm probably going to shut up.
Well, at some point, they need to speak out for what they actually see is going on, what they see in the numbers and their scientific conclusions. Otherwise, again, I think collectively later on, we'll have to take a bigger hit. If I mean, we have to face what's going on right now. Otherwise, if we delay and ignore, it's for most people, then this is just going to be dropped like a, you know, stone over their head. That's going to be it, you know, and it might even be too late at that point when they realize what's going on.
Yeah, one of the things that I recommend to people, I'll say it again now, is stockpile food. Because when it comes, you're not going to have time to do anything about it. So, and I do not sell food on my website.
Sure.
Also, I'm not saying that for me, but but I do have food there that because if this does happen, to me, there's going to be fighting on the streets for food long before we're covered with ice. And just to protect yourself, I would say to have a food supply hidden, and don't tell your neighbors that you have it. So that's a big thing that I'm really a strong proponent of.
Interesting. Well, that's going to get you some red ice right there, people. Interesting. But nonetheless, you had a story on your website as well a couple of days ago, or just a few actually, about, you know, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and their agenda and everything. Again, as I said, there's things going on top of this politically as well as a way to, you know, to reform the industry and everything else. And I don't know how far you would go, you know, with that to talk about it, again, having this as a conspiracy. But it seems to me that they're taking the opportunity to push, you know, the Western world in the opposite direction in terms of what they're telling them is going on with the climate. And then they're asking, you know, us to shut down, you know, industry and think about all the carbon, you know, footprints and outlets and everything else. While at the same time, and I'm not saying, and we've talked with others about this as well, I'm not saying that humans could reverse the climate if we pumped out as much carbon dioxide as we possibly could. I mean, we, as you said, I don't think we shouldn't put ourselves on that high horse. I think we're far too insignificant for that. But nonetheless, it shows that it's taking, you know, the economy in one direction, and then they're giving us a lie about the climate. So all this, is this a conspiracy, do you think, to shut down industry and everything, and they're on top of it making money for themselves through cap and trade and such? Or how do you see this?
Well, part of it is, I don't know if it's conspiracy. They're following, well, yeah, I guess part of it's a conspiracy, but they're following President Obama's lead. President Obama has said, and I have a video on the website of him saying this, but he says he wants to shut down the coal industry essentially, and he says that because of that, that electricity prices will, in his words, necessarily skyrocket. But the article you're talking about the EPA, yeah, I'll quote just from it here just for a second. The president's policies are not about carbon. They are not about coal. And they are not even about energy and the environment. They are about fundamentally altering the DNA of the capitalist system. These policies are not about energy, but power.
Yeah,
that was written by a guy by the name of Alan Karuba, and unfortunately, I have to agree with him. You know, the president says he wants to get jobs, but the EPA is putting hundreds of thousands of Americans out of work at a time when so many of us are unemployed. It's just incredible to me that, you know, we're throwing untold millions of dollars at solar power, which, you know, would be great if it would work, and we're throwing millions and millions of dollars at wind energy, which would be great if it worked, but on, you know, a solar panel doesn't work very well when it's covered with 3 feet of snow. And they're already finding that the windmills don't work well at all. They don't turn when they're covered with ice. So,
yeah.
You know, it's too bad that we can't just let the capitalist system or just people who want to make a profit figure this out, because, you know, throwing money at a technology that is not proven at all is not working. It is not working. Now, you know, because of this, energy prices, in Germany, energy prices have increased like 5 times. I don't know how much, but in the United Kingdom, energy prices have doubled. And right now in the United States, propane prices have quadrupled just in the last week. And yet our president and our EPA is fighting energy. I don't begin to understand why they're doing that. It makes absolutely no sense. There's no logic to it, but they seem to think there is.
So you're basically saying that all of this worry that people do about, what we've been fed with the climate and, you know, carbon and global warming, that all that's in vain. And then on top of it, you have basically a government making centralized decision on top of industry to have them make economic decisions based on faulty climate data, shady client science, etc. And this is going to lead to further economic hardship, right?
Sure. Well, and talking about how bad global warming would be if there even were such a thing. Now, I know in the United States, retirees, let's say that they live in Minnesota, but they love to move to Arizona or Florida once they grow older. They love to go to Arizona and Florida or Mexico for their vacations. And I'm sure in Europe, the same thing. In Sweden, people probably like to retire south of Sweden, don't they?
Sorry, say that again.
Do people in Sweden like to retire in countries south of Sweden?
No, it's very uncommon, actually, unfortunately. No,
is it really? Okay.
The government is going to have people working until they're 78 or 80 now soon. That's the policy in Sweden. So, you know, they'll work us to death and then that will be it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's socialism for you. You know, it's wonderful.
Okay. Well, I think that, and I imagine some of your listeners do believe in socialism, but from what I can see in the United States, that a lot of what we're doing is leading us into socialism and leading us into a lot more government control, just total government control, and wealth redistribution. And I think that previous histories have shown that does not work, but
well, you're right. I mean, and exactly, and I just have to chime in on that and say, you know, I'm born and raised in Sweden. It is a corporate monopoly mixed with socialism, and I've seen these policies that they have in the country, which I now see is being exported to the rest of the world. It's destroyed the country in that regard. It's completely shut it down. It's turned it into a social engineered, place of conformity, and there's so many issues and problems which I see would actually eased up if there were, I mean, more people would be able to get employed and everything else, if there was some leverage on the state control of things with the taxes and the tariffs and the red tape and everything else. So I've seen it up close. I mean, I can't do anything else than criticize it. And I'm not saying that all the other options that are out there are the best ones either, but there's certainly a vantage point from my viewpoint that a free market moving towards that system would intensely, benefit the problems and the situations that we've had in the country. And the more they try to enforce this particular policy of socialism or a democratic socialism or the third way, the worse it gets. The only thing I want to add to this is that I'm born and raised in this, and people criticize me for criticizing this system, which is hilarious, because it's a system that promotes empty promises of a utopia. And usually people who never have lived in these conditions fight the hardest for it and the strongest proponents of it. And I think it's a shame that people are not, willing to listen to their fellow man who actually have lived in these conditions. But, it's a big problem, since so few people here speak out about it, since so few know how to organize and criticize and be loud about it. Outsiders unfortunately mistake this for consent, and they think, wow, it has to be the greatest thing ever. And they have no idea how it inhibits creativity and production, it conforms everyone. The sameness, the equality is deadening. I mean, the social planning combined with the nanny state policies have created children who are completely incapable of doing anything on their own. It's turned our people into a collective. I would compare it to an ant farm. You know, they just do what they're told. They trample over each other to follow orders of the hierarchy, you know. The type of socialism that is promoted here is the New World Order's wet dream, because it's a soft tyranny. It's definitely there, but it's not as physical as it was in, for example, the Soviet Union. So this is socialism with a smile. You'll learn to love your servitude. Outside people who never lived in these conditions don't understand that. They think they know, but they don't. I mean, ask people in Eastern Europe or in Scandinavia who are awake, who can put two and two together. They'll see this. They'll tell you this. I mean, I will continue to speak out against it and warn for the consequences that comes with what they're promoting right now in the world. I'm sorry for this rant, Robert, but I have to get it out there. I have to talk about this and warn people and tell them what it really is like.
Good. I think we're on the same page here. At freedom, people will do what's best for themselves if they possibly can. And in solar panels, if there were a way to make them where people would want to buy them, and if they actually did work economically, then people would buy them. Or, you know, I see solar panels beside the roads where they use solar panels to control the warning signals. I think that's a great idea. And things like that. And as the free market would develop these and get them down to the price where people could afford them, then I think it would be wonderful if we could switch over to solar. But let people make their own decisions. I hate it when people who don't even know what they're doing are making decisions that affect my life.
Well, exactly, and that's the nature of centralized government. It's by default pretty it's pretty stupid, actually. I mean, I've seen this so many times within the European Union, how they run agricultural business from a central point in Brussels, and it's just completely, it doesn't work because they don't have people on the ground. They don't have connection with the local, you know, land and what the policies should be there. So it's very, it's very, very stupid in that regard, and it's being tried right now in the European Union to run it that way, and it keeps getting worse and worse every year. So it's just hilarious to watch it, you know.
Well, and that would be the same thing. I mean, you asked when did I think that we would realize that the global warming story is wrong and realize that we're moving into an ice age. And I guess it's the same thing that you're talking about with that democratic socialism, is that probably a few million people have to die before we finally realize that what's the truth. And I'm afraid that that's going to be the same as we enter into the ice age, is that a few million people are going to have to die before we finally wake up and say, hey, it's getting colder.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it doesn't happen in my lifetime. I hope it doesn't happen in my lifetime, but I think we're seeing the beginning right now, and certainly, Piers Corbyn and Dr. Abdussamatov, all of these astrophysicists that are studying it, they say that it's going to be getting colder for at least the next 30 years, because they're talking mini ice age. Of course, I'm talking about a full-fledged ice age, so I think it's going to keep on getting even colder, and not necessarily colder, but snowier and snowier and snowier.
Indeed. Let's take a short break here, Robert, and then we can pick up after the break. There's much more to add to this. There's many more developments that have occurred that is pointing in this direction, and I want to ask you more about that after the break. But let's give us some of the details here first about your books and your websites. You have, I believe, two books out there. Please go ahead and mention those, how people can get copies of the books, and give us all the website URLs as well.
Okay. I do have Not by Fire, But by Ice. That's the first book that I wrote, and it's Discover What Killed the Dinosaurs and Why It Could Soon Kill Us. And we haven't discussed it yet, but one of the triggers that I think is a magnetic reversal. Then the second book is Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, The True Origin of Species. But as I wrote the first book, Not by Fire but by Ice, I kept noticing that it seemed like evolution took leaps at magnetic reversals. So the magnetic reversals coincide with extinctions, but they also coincide with the appearance of new species. So that's the second book. The website is iceagenow.info. And the other is evolutionaryleaps.com.
All right, very good. Iceagenow.info and also iceagenow.com. And then the Evolutionary Leaps. We'll have all of these linked up there and check out the books as well. And we'll get into some of that, the second book that you have out there as well on magnetic reversals a little bit in the next segment. So stay with us, Robert. We'll be right back.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. And listen, Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly, flow like a harpoon daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle.
Damn,
crush a speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom.
Deadly,
when I play a dope melody, anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it, you better gain weight. You better hit fools out of kids, don't play. If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Kick out the hook while my DJ revolves. Continue to A1A. Girls were hot, wearing less than bikinis. Rock men lovers, driving Lamborghinis.
Jealous,
cause I'm out getting mine. Shade with a gauge and vanilla with a nine.
Ready
for the chumps on the wall. The chumps acting ill because they're full of eight balls. Gunshots ranged out like a bell. I grabbed my nine, all I heard was shell.
Falling
on the concrete real fast. Jumped in my car, slammed on the gas. Bumper to bumper, the avenue's packed. I'm trying to get away before the jack is jacked.
Police
on the scene, you know what I mean? They passed me up, could run it all, I don't mean. If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook when my DJ revolves it. Yo, man, let's get out of here. Word to your mother.
In the second hour coming up, we talk about the increasing propane and electricity prices as we're experiencing the lowest temperatures since 1918. Then we'll discuss magnetic pole reversals that match up with ice age cycles. Robert shares his theory on how evolutionary leaps can take place during a magnetic reversal. He presents an explanation for certain mysteries surrounding extinction events, and the appearances of new species. Later, we hear about the 500-year orbital stretch cycle, also due at this time. At the end, Robert talks about how ice ages come on suddenly, and he mentions what to look out for. The second hour is available at redicemembers.com. Subscribe and tune in to any of our previous programs and upcoming shows. We have a bunch of material for you on the website, so do check it out. We have upcoming, by the way, Sophia Smallstorm on the conspiracy behind Sandy Hook. Have to listen to that show. Don't miss that one. We have William Mullen, John King, Kung Pop Yu Yen, Barbara Peterson, and Karen Hughes on after that. We'll be right back. The second hour with Robert Felix is coming up as we talk more about the next ice age and magnetic reversals and evolutionary leaps.